Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point, Westside High School in Newark, New Jersey. A couple of years ago, a 16-year-old student tried to walk through the school's metal detectors. Security wanted to check her bag, but she protested. She threw water at them. She didn't want anyone to see what was inside. Well, the police came, and they looked inside the bag, and you know what they found? They found the young woman's dirty clothes. She had been homeless that weekend, and all she was trying to do was trying to hide her shame. Well, Westside High has more stories like this. Students who don't have access to washing machines for all sorts of reasons. Kids who are bullied for it, so they don't come to school. As a result, 85% of Westside students are chronically absent. So Principal Akbar Cook decided to do something about it. And this hour, we're going to hear about it. This hour on Point, a high school, a laundromat, and hope. And you can join us. Are there simple solutions that could make a huge difference in your school? What's the impact on kids and families when it's their school that has to provide basic services and an education as well? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining us today from Newark, New Jersey is Akbar Cook. He is the principal of Westside High School. Principal Cook, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it.
It's a privilege to have you, Principal Cook. I was wondering if we could just start by you telling us more of the story that I introduced us with. Can you tell us a little bit more about what happened to this 16-year-old student a couple of years ago?
So you said it so well. It gave me some goosebumps listening to it. But, you know, we're urban district, so we have metal detectors in the high schools. So we were just checking, just normal checks. And as you said earlier, she protested. She didn't want us to go in a bag. And for me being a protector, I should have been more on point. I should have just noticed. I was just looking at the cover. Like, she had her makeup done, you know, eyebrows. Just everything was slayed, as the ladies would say. And she was hiding a secret, and I didn't know, just like so many of my other students. They were just hiding the fact that she was homeless for weeks, and she didn't want anyone to know. So it sent chills down my spine, and I realized that I had to do something, that just out of the box thinking. And I just thought, the easiest thing would be to do was get washers and dryers.
Right. Principal Cook, can you hang on here for a second? Because we're going to talk in detail about this really creative and effective solution that you found for this particular challenge. But I still want to know more, if I could ask you, about, you know, after that moment where the police were called and they looked into her bag and everyone discovered that all she was trying to do was just, you know, hide the truth about her really tough circumstances. Did you have a chance to talk with her about that after that moment?
No, at that time we have student support services. Okay. I have some amazing ladies in and that are social workers and guidance counselors. So if it's a lady situation, I tend to, you know, gravitate towards them because the young lady may not want to go into depth with me. So they unpack further with her.
Right.
And then I just took it from there.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, so how common, though, are stories like that at Westside High?
It was every day. I mean, you said it. I had 85% of my kids staying home 3 to 5 days a month. And we started just, you know, sending out fillers. I started sending folks to homes, knocking on doors and calling parents. And once you started digging deep, you found out the parents didn't have it. The kids were being bullied or they just was embarrassed, didn't want to come. And it was just something that they had no way of preventing. It was out of their hands, and I wanted to remove that barrier for them. So this, I thought, was the easiest way.
You know, we will talk about solutions and policy, but I think what I'd hope we could do is hear more of the stories first, because I want you to tell us about the lives of these kids. I mean, you're saying that a lot of the kids in the school don't have access to basic services like washing machines. Why is that?
It's I would have to say, I mean, it goes back to, let's say, child protective services. I feel like Child Protective Services, in whatever state they're in, they tend to gravitate towards the elementary and the middle school kids, and they forget about the high school kids. So that same parent that may have to rob Peter to pay Paul, as they say, they would forgive the younger kids that, so it wouldn't be any Child Protective Services coming into the house and doing all that, whereas the high school, it just goes unchecked, and those are my babies. So that's why I think a lot of it goes on, because that same parent has to make sure that the little one is not disheveled and usually lets the older one just go without.
I see. And you have a lot of students who are actually also taking care of their younger siblings as well.
Yes. I didn't know the word parentified until I got to West Side. Basically, that same parent may be doing all these odd jobs and can't be home, or there's just not at home at all. I have a lot of great grands and great grand aunts taking care of these kids, and it's hard for someone that age to keep up with, you know, someone that's 15, 16 years old. So these kids are doing it on their own. And even when you think about the whole thing of education, some of these babies can't wait, you know, the 4 or 5 years for the college degree when they have to take care of their little siblings, because they know once they leave the home, no one is going to do it. So they're having to deal with these type of issues every day.
And they're bringing all that with them to school. I mean, it's when you hear that, it's no wonder that sometimes just not showing up is the option they take.
Yes, and Megna, we didn't even talk about transportation. In Newark, unless you 2.5 miles away, you're not, eligible for bus tickets. And that same kid has to walk their siblings to school and then have to brave the elements and even navigate through gang territories to get to school. By the time they get to me, they're either wet from the inclement weather or just sweating if it was hot. It's just, and then, you know, they miss breakfast. So there's so many things that before you can even get to the education part, you got to take care of their basic needs.
Mm. And so you had mentioned that a lot of the students, or you found out that students were, you know, because they maybe didn't have the access or even the money or the time or the ability to wash their clothes, that they were getting bullied at school. Can you tell me more about that?
So, I mean, that when I first got wind of the kids staying home, we sought to take remove that barrier. But as it progressed, because I found out and we received some funding from PSENG, which is our local energy company. And I thought, we did it. I thought, all right, wow, I'm just going to go to Home Depot, buy some washing and dryers, and that would be it. But once my district starts saying, oh, we got to vent this out, you got to move this, asbestos that, you know, it became this long, drawn-out process. So I started giving away everything that I had in my school store, which was apparel, because how dare I sit on something that says West Side when I know a kid didn't have. So we started doing that, but that was just a Band-Aid. And then, as I said, this young lady, that situation, we still was trying to push and get the stuff, and it didn't happen. But it wasn't until I started seeing kids on Snapchat or Instagram maybe taking a picture of someone's collar or, you know, making fun of them or their shoes. That's when we had to put our foot down, and I went back to my superintendent, and we made it happen. So that's what started happening, Magna.
You know, Principal Cook, I really appreciate you taking the time to unfold some of these stories for us, because I think it's really important for all of us listening to understand why the solution that you came up with, or, you know, one of the solutions you came up with, was so powerful, right? Because on the surface of it, you think, a washing machine. Most people, or a lot of people, are able to take that for granted, but it made a really big difference. So tell us, like, what did you do, or how did you come up with this idea to, put some washing machines and some dryers in the school and make that available to the kids? And what difference did it make?
These kids are coming up with these ideas that West Side has been following through with, but I thought that was just the easiest way to remove the barrier and give these kids a sense of pride, was empowering them. And plus, it's teaching a life skill. I mean, once you have it in your building, you know, you can really monitor, you know, what kids know what they're doing and what's not. Again, I told you they're parentified, so some of them don't even know how to wash clothes, and I found that out fairly quickly. Once we opened up the laundromat, I was having kids putting all this laundry detergent in there, just too much, and then putting them in the wrong spot. And then when it was drying, it was putting 5 dryer sheets. So it was just like, wow, I didn't know. So we had to, you know, basically start over and just started teaching them how to wash clothes and take care of that, and giving them bags that, you know, to take it back. And I thought that it was going to be the bravest students at first that was going to take advantage of this, but it was everyone. It was the kids just really needed that outlet, and we provided it to them. So now we're using the washing dryers. I want to say six, 7 days a week. If I'm open on Sunday, they're there. And it's all day long. I have to like almost like make appointments for the kids to do that. And we've been staying open, I want to say, to about 6-7 o'clock every night and 11 o'clock on Friday night. So we really just been, you know, doing whatever we can to remove that barrier. And it's been working out.
You know, I want to say that that kids not knowing exactly how to use a washing machine is no fault of their own. I lots of people make it pretty far through life without knowing how to properly wash their clothes.
Absolutely. We're not even going to talk about ironing.
So, but I was interested to hear you just say that, like, it wasn't hard to get kids to use it. Because my first thought was going to be like, well, you know, you're dealing with trying to break down the barriers that a lot of shame is producing. So maybe they wouldn't, you know, want to be seen walking into the school's laundromat. But that hasn't been a problem.
So I had to have convocation. I think everything with my kids, I've got to just speak for my building. They almost have to see it first, and you almost have to paint that picture for them. So I had a convocation, and I talked about, because most of these same kids maybe live in apartment buildings, or even if they're in a one-family home, they may not have a wash and dryer in the space. So they have to go to laundromats. So I was saying, you're going to give up your Saturday or your Sunday to go to the laundromat where you can be in school while you're in practice or while you're getting tutoring. Like it started to make sense for them. Like, yeah, why would I kill my Saturday when I can go and take care of this on a Tuesday afternoon? So once I prefaced it that way, my kids are, you know, no dummies. They realized fairly quickly that this was the move so they can get back their weekends.
So has it helped with the truancy, and has it helped with the bullying?
Absolutely. I want to say we up 10%. I usually look at my freshmen. My freshmen are averaging by 92% average daily attendance, and my sophomores are scratching at that surface. So in my juniors, the seniors still have their little senioritis going on, so they're probably in the high 80s. But it's definitely, like, I want to say overall, it's about a 10% increase from the previous year. And now that we removed the, you know, I don't have clean clothes, now we can get to the other things, which is, you know, I can't, you know, we don't have any food, or we don't have any transportation. So now I remove that barrier. It's moving on to the next barrier that's preventing them from coming to school. So we still have a long way to go, but at least we know the narratives now, and we remove that barrier.
Well, you're listening to Principal Akbar Cook. He is the principal of Westside High School in Newark, New Jersey. And we're talking about a high school, a laundromat, and hope. And the bigger picture of what schools are expected to or have to provide in terms of basic services, even before they start thinking about having to educate their kids and what that means for the rest, for them and for all of us as a nation. Principal Cook, stand by. We're going to be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Principal Akbar Cook. He's the principal of Westside High School in Newark, New Jersey. And we're talking with him because he's come up with a very creative way. He's not the only principal out there who's done this, but he's one of them. He put a laundromat in his high school to help students who were either homeless or didn't have access to any kind of washing services to get their clothes clean, to reduce how much they were being bullied, and to encourage them to come to school in order to cut truancy rates. And it's been very, very effective. Let's listen to Brianna Singleton. She's a student at Westside High. She told CBS This Morning last month that Principal Cook really helped her feel comfortable using the school's laundry room.
When you first got it, I ain't gonna lie, I was kind of scared to bring my clothes over, but I struggled it all. So when I went to cook, I asked them, yo, can I use the laundry mat? He like, no, you good. We nothing but family in here. You can bring it anytime you want. Even though we students, he treat us more like we his child. Like, we could come in with a bad day. We talk to him. He make our day better.
It's Brianna Singleton, a student at Westside High. What is your question for Principal Akbar Cook? And what's your reaction to the fact that so many schools, like Westside High, now have to provide basic services, perhaps even before they think about teaching and learning? Principal Cook, you know, in hearing Brianna in that cut of sound, it just really grabbed at my heartstrings. So she was talking about how you approach your job and the school as family, Can you tell us more about that?
I mean, that's all I know. I know that in most instances, I'm all they have. I mean, the term locus parentis, in the event the parent is not there, I'm the parent. I take that true to heart. And when they come through those doors, I'm responsible for them. So, again, me getting the narrative and building these relationships, you realize who have and who don't. So you have to be everything for them. I mean, it's just what you have to do now in urban America to make sure that these kids are successful.
So just sort of some nuts and bolts here before I forget, Principal Cook. The laundromat that you created in the school, you have industrial size washers and dryers there. So, I mean, was it expensive? And if so, where'd the money come from?
So I had a meeting with my alumni association, and we had some real, I want to say, powerful stakeholders at the table from the community, and PSENG is our local energy company. And I put it out to them that my kids needed washers and dryers, and they jumped up to the forefront, and they told me, "Just cook, you just have to write a grant." And I said, "Okay." And I wrote the worst grant in history. I think I just said, "We need washers and dryers, please." And they still rewarded me with the $20,000.
Well, it could be the best grant in history. You're just getting straight to the point.
I don't think my English teachers are going to agree, but yes, ma'am.
Well, I would say they do, because oftentimes people. So here's the thing: people complicate what are simple, powerful issues with a lot of extraneous language, right? With a lot of extraneous ideas. And you're getting right to the heart of the matter, which is we need this. It's going to make an immediate impact and it's going to help. And so I'm glad I'm really glad it worked. But I got to ask you, I mean, how much does you're a New York native, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So how different was your experience growing up, or was it, from the kids who you're the principal to now?
Well, I come from a single parent background. A lot of the ladies in my life, my grandmother, my aunts, they helped raise me into this man that you all are seeing. But I grew up just playing basketballs in the backyards with my friends, and same way. And I just was blessed with the athletic prowess to get a scholarship to go to school for free. But a lot of my friends, they didn't. So I see the wins and I see the losses. So I just wanted to make sure that even though they may come from single family homes or disadvantaged homes, that I would be everything they need to make sure they can get through to a living wage. And that's what we're trying to do at Westside.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of calls coming in, Principal Cook. So let me just bring some of them onto the air here. Olivia is calling from Marysville, Michigan. Olivia, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say thank you. I forget the principal's name, but thank you to what he's doing. Because when I was in high school, I became homeless after my dad passed away. And I went to my guidance counselors trying to get assistance. And I went to school in an old money neighborhood. And they really weren't able to help me at all. So I think it's amazing that he took the time and money to help these kids out. Because it is hard to do both.
Yeah. Olivia, can I just ask you quickly? First of all, I'm really sorry that you had to go through that experience as being in high school. I mean, what were the kinds of things that you desperately wanted or needed at the time?
Well, one thing I really hated was I was living in my car in the school parking lot. They would tell me that I had to leave at night. And I know just like basic toiletries, because trying to find a job when you don't have an address mm-hmm. is hard enough. So like basic toiletries, getting my clothes washed. I would have to go in the bathroom really early, like right when the school doors open, to brush my teeth and make my hair not look disgusting, because sometimes it would get really greasy. And thankfully, I had a friend that ended up taking me in. But a couple of weeks before that, it was impossible.
Yeah.
So him taking the time to help these people is amazing. It really makes the difference.
Olivia, thank you so much for your call. Principal Cook, do you want to respond to her?
Yes. So what we've started doing, we received so many donations of laundry detergent. I had asked everyone to stop. Like even, Procter & Gamble got involved, and, they sent thousands of Tide, Downy, and Bounce. And we started saying to what the young lady was talking about, we said, can we start getting some toiletries, feminine products, and just deodorant, just anything you can think of that a baby would need if they was homeless. And now we have a free store. When I'm saying packed to the ceiling with all of those things that the kids can go in and get it for free. That's how we, you know, we turned it around. And now we have a free store for kids, even for clothes. So I'm hoping we won't have any more of those stories now that we provided them with the school store.
Mm. Let's go to Deborah, who's calling from Burlington, Vermont. Deborah, you're on the air.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I was driving, I'm in Burlington, Vermont, and I was just driving to the store, and when I heard a principal talk about his kids and refer to them as babies, I just became overcome with emotion and had to pull over and cry. And I think that further on, he started calling them his kids, and I realized that this is his family, mm-hmm. but he's giving them love, and that's what they really need, and I think that that's going to save them. Having grown up rough in New Jersey myself, I never received anything like that on a school level, and I think that that's what they need.
Yeah. Deborah, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Pete, who's calling from Rock Hill, South Carolina. Pete, you're on the air.
Hello, Principal Cook, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Hello. Yes. I just wanted to say that I've been in ministry for 45 years, and my wife and I have run a group called Truck of Love, and this group is doing the same thing you are, which is paying attention to the need of the people. Doing something about it once you figure out what the need is and how to do it. And the only way you can do that is to just determine to do it. And once you determine to do it, get a group of people to help you to do it. And then once that's happened, get it done. And you're doing good. I just wanted to give you kudos for what you're doing. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Pete, thank you for your call. So, Principal Cook, I got to face something head on with you because I've been kind of pushing this set of questions or feelings away for a while, but you know what? We're gonna be on point about this. What you've done is, of course, remarkable. It's making a huge difference in the lives of your kids. And schools have always been, you know, the social center of gravity in a young person's life. But you didn't, did you? You didn't get into the business of being a principal in order to provide what's essentially the most basic services to kids, did you? I mean, how does it make you feel that that's where you have to spend a lot of your time and effort before you can even get to educating them?
I got into it because my calling was that I could lead young people. And even if we want to like go on a tangent, even the principalship, I don't think it's about, you know, the college. You know, I read a study that said 33% of the U.S. population have college degrees. Like, what are you doing with the 67%? And that's has been my focus lately, just trying to figure out how to make my babies that I know are not going to school, or if they're going to school, they don't have that person at home that's going to help them power through. Just trying to figure out a way for them to achieve a living wage. So that's where it's kind of shifted. But before you can even get to that, again, you have to build them up from the bottom. And if they're not eating, you have to remove that barrier. If they're not, you know, going to sleep, or they don't have a shelter, yeah, or a home or anything, like nothing is going to work. You can have a Harvard student in your building, but if they are not eating and sleeping at night, they're not going to, you know, go to their full potential. So I just been trying to figure out how to just remove the barriers. It's almost like dissolving problems and just letting them be students again. I mean, just like kids. I mean, they're growing up so fast with the social media. I mean, how can you, you know, help them achieve their full potential if you are not removing those barriers that are preventing them? So that's what I've been trying to do. So yeah. I don't know if it's just a principalship or it's just me as a man, just being the person that my grandma raised. So that's all I can say.
It's probably both, I'll say. But aren't we collectively as a nation, aren't we failing these kids? Because, I mean, if we're dumping the responsibility onto schools to provide something as basic as a place to wash their clothes, something's gone horribly wrong, hasn't it?
Yes, it's definitely going wrong. I think we get caught up in the test scores and the college. Like, when you look, everyone talks about graduation rates. Oh, I got 100% graduation rate. But if your kids are home before Christmas break, what does that graduation rate mean? We should be talking about retention rates and just trying to figure out how we getting them to a living wage. And my superintendent now, he is caught on, and he is talking about from cradle until they receive a living wage. So I think the word is getting out. But, I mean, every school has to, you know, talk about what's going on in their building. Mine may be, I need to feed them. The next town over may be about, you know, test prep. I mean, I can't speak for that school, but I know in most urban districts, this is going on. And even sometimes in the suburban areas, those families were hit with, you know, recession type things, and their kids are not doing well. So it's really just trying to get the narrative. You have to build these relationships. And I will say this, the best teachers have the best relationships with kids. And I think that will go for the administration as well.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the phones. Tony is calling from St. Petersburg, Florida. Tony, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And Principal Cook, thank you for the work that you're doing. People like you are the glue that are holding our communities together. And
thank
as such,
sir.
My question is directed at you. If you had an audience with your state Secretary of Education or state legislature, even Congress, you know, we know now that we are failing our social contract. We're failing these kids. We're failing our communities. What aid, what solutions would you ask from the quote-unquote powers that be to help cut to the root of these problems instead of just relying on principals to provide Band-Aids like washing machines?
Yeah.
So thank you for that. I would just say that we need to concentrate more on building grit and perseverance in these kids, because they can go, we can hoard all of them to school, we can, but they're going to come back home, and better yet, they're not going to have anyone to speak to about what's the next step. If they first generation in college, how can they call back to grandma and say, grandma, I don't know what to do with a bursar or a registrar? So I'm thinking we need to build the grit into the curriculum, but also I'm looking at education and just life is like four categories for me. So you have kids that are going to a 2- and 4-year college, right? You also have kids that are going to the military. You also have kids that may do trade school. And then you have that student that is not going to school. They're done. They got to take care of their family. They got to take care of them. They're going right to the workforce. How can we address all four of those modules those four targets and start, you know, moving kids to those and just trying to give them all the support so they can be effective and resilient in those areas instead of just saying they all going to college. Everyone's not going to college. I mean,
yeah.
And it's just what it is. And until America stopped charging $200,000 for a kid that don't have the money in the first place for them to owe Sally Mae at the end, and we in tribute to the poverty, it's like we really have to find a way to, again, take care of that 67%. And that's why I think Amazon and other companies like that, they are doing well because they are taking on that 67% and giving them jobs. So I know I'm all over the place, but I would just say we need to do more about grit and perseverance, because I haven't touched Algebra 2 since I left high school. Like, why are we, you know, so gung-ho about Algebra 2 when we should be teaching kids how to balance a checkbook instead?
You know, Principal Cook, I hear you about grit and perseverance, but you also said that in a way, no matter how much grit and perseverance the young people that you're working with have every day, and they do. I mean, honestly, I feel like they have grit just by having to like live the lives that they live every day. But, you know, for those who do go on to college or even after high school, because they don't have that network or the resources or the people that you were saying, like, who are they going to call with basic questions? They could have all the grit in the world, but they still don't have those foundational resources that a lot of other people just take for granted.
And yeah, it's definitely going to have to be, you know, maybe some classes for those same parents, you know, maybe doing some co-schools, like where the parents is going back and maybe not getting, I mean, they may have the GED, but they may not know how to help their kid. If we can start, you know, maybe looking out for the like you said, the network and helping these kids, or just have a place. It can be in local areas. You can just have a place where, like, a 1-800 number or a place that these kids can go when they don't have a answer to you know, what's in front of them. So it don't have to be just the parents, because like I said, some of the parents are not there or they gone, you know, whether you want to say by drugs or just out of it. But we still need to come up with resources for the kids to be able to call where there's no judgment if they call and they have to ask the easiest question that may be easy to other people, but they may not have. So maybe to set up centers like that for the kids can call.
You know, Principal Cook, we've got about a minute before we have to take another quick break here, but I wanted to ask you of the kids whose parents, you know, are in their lives, or grandparents or any family members, have you reached out to them, and have they become part of the process of what you're trying to do at Westside High?
Yes, the parents that I have that are on point are there, and they are making sure that my kids are getting whatever they need. But most of my parents are not there. I've gone school years without seeing parents. I'm talking about, you know, report card day, parent teacher night, back to school night. Just don't come, no matter what day I put it on, what time. They're just not there. Again, it gets back to what I said earlier about social services. They're more, you know, worried about the middle school, and they just leave the high school kids, you know, to the wayside, even though they have at least, or at the most, 4 years before they enter society.
Well, you're listening to Principal Akbar Cook. He is the principal of Westside High School in Newark, New Jersey. And we're talking about a laundromat, a high school, and hope. This is a conversation about the remarkable work he's doing in Newark, New Jersey, and also the bigger question of the basic social services that we are asking schools to provide these days. What's going wrong there? This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Principal Akbar Cook. He's the principal of Westside High School in Newark, New Jersey. And we're talking about his high school, the laundromat he put in there, and the hope that it provides, and the bigger question of why, across America, in both urban and rural places, more and more basic social services have to come from schools, and what that means for the children in those schools, for the educators, and for their education overall. Principal Cook, our phone lines have really lit up here. Folks want to talk to you, so let me bring some more of them in. Karen's calling from Detroit, Michigan. Karen, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, Principal Cook. First, let me say that I am just so thankful. It's like cries because I'm emotional. I'm so thankful for what you're doing for these kids because, like you talk about the laundry, I worked as a substitute in Detroit for a long time. I've had to have discussions regarding hygiene with third graders and tell them how to wash their underwear in the sink. I didn't, you know, embarrass anybody. I just talked to the whole class. I need to talk about the fact that you said you can't teach hungry kids. Well, you can't teach dirty kids because they're aware that they're dirty. The things with the name brand apparel, the kids asking you to buy them lunch. Teachers spend a lot of their money on supplies. We're expected to be police officers, social workers, everything. But I do believe that school is a part of social work. Mm. The last thing I want to say, I don't want to, you know, take up all the time, is there are things that there's just so much that needs to be done that shouldn't have to be done. And, God, I'm forgetting my thought.
That's all right, Karen.
Okay. Last thing I'll just say is teachers need to be respected more and paid more. Oh, I do remember the other one. They also need to communicate better with parents, because a lot of parents have had extremely negative experiences when they were in school.
Uh-huh.
And they're not always welcomed in the building. They're talked down to. They're blamed. And every parent cannot deal with their kid.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's not always the parent's fault. So I'm going to let you go. And again, thank you very much.
Hey, Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
Principal Cook, what would you like to say to her?
No, I agree. Most parents have that anxiety for having a bad, you know, encounter at school. So that maybe that's some of the reasons why they don't want to come. And there are, I mean, all children are different. And there's some, I've seen some situations where the parent was asking for help and saying, "Cook, I don't know what to do. I just can't, you know, get to, you know, him or her." And they need help. I mean, it's just a new normal right now. And if you think about schools, I mean, we are pretty much in the center of pretty much every city And the kids are there 8-10 hours a day. Most of the times they're with us more than they are with their family. So I think it does start with us. That's why I think we should take care of those basic needs and just remove all of the, you know, the things of a bad parent can help. Like if you don't have the food, we should be feeding the kids 3-4 times a day if we can. I mean, that's what I believe the taxes are for.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Lisa, who's calling from Silver Creek, New York. Lisa, you're on the air.
Principal, I'm just so proud of you. And I'm glad that you are sending this word to the nation, because it's not just in the city schools. I'm a retired administrator in Appalachian, and we have these same problems because of lack of water, lack of resources, and it's spread across the country. We need to put our children first.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
Forget blaming the parents. There is a wonderful resource in Dade County, Florida. Miami has an unbelievable school district and an unbelievable supportive program. I got a lot of my ideas, and they're willing to share.
Hey, Lisa, can you tell us? Yeah, sorry to jump in there, Lisa, but tell us a little bit more about the program you're just talking about, and what are they willing to share? What do they do?
Well, I worked with Dade County. Now, this was at the turn of the century, regarding truancy, poverty, resources needing for children, and we brought up in the one school district I worked in, our truancy rate from 88% attendance to a 97% attendance because we met the children's needs. Mm. Children want to come to school. And Dade County had, because of their population, diverse population, they had a lot of situations that they weren't getting kids to school. And they had a wonderful program that helped this.
Yeah.
And like he said, there's lots of grants out there. You just have to look for them. But him helping the children and spreading this word that it's across the United States, it's just not inner city, it's also rural America. Mm-hmm. Children are not having their needs met.
Well, Lisa,
and we're not going to have a future if we don't have our children.
Yeah, Lisa, thank you so much for your call. Principal Cook, would you like to respond to Lisa?
No, Lisa just hit it right on the nose. I mean, they are our future, and why not, you know, put all the resources in them to make them successful? I mean, we didn't get into this game for money. That's just the nature of the beast. We got in it because we love kids and we want to make a difference. What better way of making that difference of removing all of these barriers? We cannot. They saying schools look like the same way as they did 100 years ago. In rows, you know, same stuff, and that was sending kids to the, you know, the factories. That's not it right now. These kids can, right out of high school, they could be an app creator. They could be on, you know, doing all these amazing things. Let's figure out what that kid wants to be and let's get them to there as fast as possible, because they can't wait those 4 or 5 years until they get a college degree. So I'm all for it. Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah. Principal Cook, I've got to ask you, it was what, 4 or 5 years ago that Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg gave Newark, your district, $100 million to try to make a big change in the lives of young people. And it's been pretty well covered that money did not move the needle, that there were a lot of places to point the finger of blame, but it didn't really move the needle. I mean, you're still having to provide a laundromat for your kids here. So, I mean, is there some political thing, a structural problem? I mean, where would you have people who are policymakers focus their efforts so that we can move the needle more successfully?
I would. It first starts with attendance, right, and getting the best teachers in front of those kids. So, I mean, the kids don't want to learn from people they don't like. So, again, getting back to the relationships, I think you have to hire the bravest souls that want to do this work. Again, you're not going to become a millionaire, but you will have that goal played around your heart by seeing your kids be successful. So I would just say dump more resources into getting teachers the best professional development so they can be who we want them to be, and just making sure the kids are just, you know, all the resources are right there for them, and let them dream and let them get back to just, you know, just being at an amazing kid that want to fly. And just, I don't know. I don't know where they should have put the money, and I don't tend to worry about what everyone else is doing.
Uh-huh.
I have 700 kids in front of me that need me right now. I can't worry about the policies. I need to make sure that they're successful. I got 200 seniors going into the real world in like less than 3 months. So that's my focus. And I think that's when we all stop, you know, let the people that do the policy, they handle that. But the principals need to, you know, make sure that all of their kids are successful.
All right. So then let me ask you specifically, if you could wave a magic wand or have one wish fulfilled for what you need at Westside this year, what would it be?
I just would love to have the most amazing teachers that make learning fun and have the best relationships with kids. That's in all aspects, not just the teachers, staff. I would just love to have that. That doesn't go on in every building. Some people, like, I'm telling you, I get teachers that come from other, workforces that didn't make it there. But since we have a short on teachers, they come and they just waste our time. Mm-hmm. So I would just love to have just those great innovative minds. I don't care how old or what they look like. As long as they got the best relationship with kids and they know the pedagogy, I want to put them in front of my babies. And I think that's when we'll start changing the world.
Yeah. You know, we have been talking a lot about the laundromat at Westside High. But can you tell me a little bit about the Lights On program as well? Because you hinted at it earlier in the show that kids can stay on Fridays at school up to 11 o'clock at night. So what's the Lights On program?
Wow. So I want to say when we first got the word that we were going to Westside, I was at another school. And I was kind of scared, Magna, because I heard the bad things that went on at Westside. So even though I'm from the area, it still was the Bermuda Triangle, right? So I want to say about the first week when all of us got together, school was about to open up, and we opened up with a death. They found one of my baby girls in an abandoned building, decomposed, and she was killed because she was pregnant. They didn't want the baby. So that was my first bout with death when I got to Westside. And when we opened up our doors, when I say every kid was just in a hallway, it looked like a mall. No one was going into rooms and all these gang signs. And it looked like a scene out of Training Day. And it was scary. But I had to go back to just my teachings from my grandmother. The gangsters don't come to school. They already told their families that they weren't going to do it. So if a kid is in school, they're either afraid or love mama, nana, their uncle or somebody. So we had to go at them a different way, and we led with love. It was being consistent and just loved on them until they realized, one, we weren't going anywhere. And those kids that didn't want to do it, we had to remove them. But we started righting the ship. And we started getting kids in class. I can't say a lot of teaching was going on, but at least they was in classrooms willing to learn. And I want to say about midway through that year, one of my students, a young man, he was kidnapped. And come to find out, it was alleged that he knew where the good drugs were. And when he didn't give them the information they needed, they killed him and threw his body in his neighborhood. So that was two deaths that I had at Westside. So I remember going into the summer thinking, wow, this is not what I signed up for, this losing babies. And I was listening to it's almost like a police scanner on Facebook. And I don't want to say the place, but they pretty much just talk about everything that goes on in different neighborhoods. And I remember watching everything that goes on in the West Ward. Either it was my kids that were doing it or was happening to my kids. It was a terrible summer for me. So we opened up again the next year. And again, we righted the ship and everything was going smooth. And I want to say I had this one kid that was straddling the fence. He was still in the streets, but he wanted his mother to see him walk across that stage. And he was going to do it. And I want to say about 2 weeks before graduation, he was killed by a drive-by shooting. Mm. And that was three babies that I lost. So I was saying, you know what? I'm not going into the summer being a bystander. I want to do something about it. I'm a kid that grew up in the Boys and Girls Club. So let's open up our doors on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. because that's when all of the crime was happening, and let's just provide a safe place for them. And I went to my alumni, and they said they were on. So we opened it up, and I want to say about the first week or so, we had about 30 folks there, and it was a weird demographic because I had 40-year-old parents with their kids, 25-year-old gangbangers, and 8-year-olds. But nevertheless, they needed us, so we just loved on them, and we just provided all these resources. And just at the time, the meals weren't that good. We was getting those prepackaged meals where it may have like a chicken salad sandwich in there with celery. So I find out, most of the times I was bringing that stuff to the Penn Station and feeding the homeless. But we was doing that for about 3 weeks. And then a gentleman named by the name of Barry Carter, he writes out here for NJ.com and NJ Vance and Media. And he wrote the article about Lights On. And when the word got out, I started averaging about 150 kids started coming. And it was a great summer. When I say, Magna, it was no acts of violence in my part of town. It was amazing. So school opened back up, and I want to say it was the week after Labor Day. And I said, you know what? Let's just have a great big celebration just to acknowledge the wonderful thing we did this summer. And I want to say I had 278 participants come out. I was giving out Keurig machines. We had an ice cream truck, and I had this One baby girl, she came and gave me a high five. She got some ice cream and she left. And later on that night, she was killed by a stray bullet. So that was four babies that I lost. Mm. And it drove home the point that I wasn't doing enough thing for the ladies. And I couldn't wait till the next summer to save them. So I said, you know what? We're going to open up lights on during the school year. I'm going to change my athletic schedule around. And we're going to open up from 6 to 11 every Friday night during the school year. And when I say I started adding, you know, henna, the eyelashes, I started adding the recording studio, the jewelry making, the fashion and design. We started averaging about 350 kids started coming out. Yeah. And I want to say, since we did that, Megna, and that was, what, 3 summers ago, I haven't lost any more kids to gun violence. And we've been rocking and rolling. I had 263 last Friday. So it's still going on. Yeah. And that's what I'm most happy about, is we've been saving lives and we've been showing, I guess, the nation and other principals that this can work. And you need this in your city as well to prevent the kids from getting into trouble during those hours.
Principal Cook, this Lights On program, again, it's one of those beautifully simple, elegant, and so effective solutions here. I just want to play a little bit of tape of two students and a graduate from Westside High. They spoke with ABC 7 in New York earlier this month about how the program has kept them safe.
Anything that keeps me off the street, I do. Like, besides doing anything wrong, like selling drugs and all that stuff, I'm not into that.
If I come here, I would see, like, friendly faces.
If it was around back then, I think that we wouldn't have lost so many of my classmates. Like, if we have a class reunion now, a lot of my classmates wouldn't be there.
That's graduates and students from Westside High talking about the Lights On program. Principal Cook, we've got 2 minutes left, and there's one thing I really, really want to ask you. I'm still... my heart's still pounding from when you talked about that first young woman whose body you found on the school in a trash can behind the building, who's decomposing because she'd been murdered and left there. I mean, what I want to know is your laundromat program. It's gotten a lot of national attention. Washington Post, CBS, like us now. Don't you ever want to say to the rest of the country, to the media, where were you when I found that young woman? Where were you when all the other kids I just told you about were gunned down in the streets around my high school? Where were you? Do you ever want to say that to people who come to you now and pat you on the back and say, hey, good job for that laundromat?
I mean, I never thought about it like that, Magna. I mean, you hit it right on the nose as well. I only can just keep pushing forward. I mean, I can, you know, go on guilt trips and have these sob stories. But meanwhile, I could be putting myself in position to lose another kid. So I have to keep going undefeated and just being consistent with love. Or otherwise, we're going to go back to that. I mean, you know, they say and everything comes full circle. I don't want to go back to that time. So I just been trying to focus on the love and just stay positive.
Well, Principal Akbar Cook, I learned a lot from you today. It has been such a privilege to talk with you. Thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for the work you're doing for all the young people in your life.
Thank you for having us.
Akbar Cook is the principal of Westside High School in Newark, New Jersey. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive Save the Planet? Is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time
to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.